Hello, welcome once again to Leto's Law. I'm Steve Leto. I was thinking recently about how I have testified in Lansing about legislation, and I think it's an interesting story that people should know. Number one, about how legislation gets made, but also how laws come about that affect so many people that it's kind of unusual. But, you know, I've been practicing almost exclusively in the field of lemon law since 1991, and when I started in the early 90s, the lemon law in Michigan did not cover leased vehicles. So the lemon law is where you buy a brand new vehicle and it has a problem that cannot be repaired under warranty within a certain time frame or a certain number of repair attempts. I've done entire videos on this. I'll put them below. And if that happens and the vehicle can't be fixed, you can force the manufacturer to buy the vehicle back from you. But back in the old days when it didn't cover leases, people would call my office and say, hey, Steve, I got a brand new car. It's been in the shop 6 times. They can't fix it. What can you do for me? And I'd have to ask, did you buy it or did you lease it? And if they say, well, I leased it, I'd say, well, the lemon law doesn't cover you. Now, other laws do, the Magnuson-Moss Warranty Act, the Consumer Protection Act, UCC, and so on, but they're not as clear cut. And the manufacturers knew that, and they would fight us on these cases. And you might say, Steve, that's insane that the lemon law didn't cover leased vehicles. What's that all about? Well, in the old days, when leases first got started, they were so confusing and you know, the average person to understand, that many people thought of a lease as something you would do if you were like a businessman or your company leased a vehicle, a company car. But it was a very, very uncommon thing. And it became more common as the 90s wore on. So somewhere along the line, I encountered a legislator from Wayne County, southeast corner of Michigan. And he was, you know, in Lansing working on the laws and whatnot. And he contacted me and said, hey, Steve, you know, we're thinking about actually revisiting the lemon law and having it cover leased automobiles the same way it covers purchased automobiles. And I said, that's great. I guess, you know, long time coming. It's, you know, it's about time. It, you know, this really needs to be done. And he said, well, here's the deal. He goes, I've been getting a lot of pushback from lobbyists and some of my cohorts in the legislature who are getting pushback from lobbyists. And he goes, and right now I'm here to tell you that if you were simply to believe what we've been hearing from people we work with, from people around us, from people in the community, no one wants this. It's an unnecessary change. There's absolutely no need to fix the lemon law because the lemon law is perfect as drafted. And I said, dude, that's crazy. That is absolutely crazy. I said, you know, the car companies build so many defective cars. When they sell it to somebody or they lease it to somebody, it's defective. The car doesn't know if it's been leased or not. So why would you treat it differently, you know? And he said, well, would you be willing to come to Lansing and testify about this in front of the legislature? And I said, absolutely. I didn't tell him this, but it was something I wanted to add to my resume to be able to say I've testified before the legislature. And he said, okay, well, there's a subcommittee hearing on this. And he gave me a date and a time. And he said, you know, show up and we'll put you on the agenda to testify. And I said, okay. And he said, so, you know, just if you could bring some examples with you, some details of some actual cases you've handled. And I said, not a problem. And so I went to Lansing, to the Capitol where the, you know, the legislature sits. And I found my Congress guy that I've been talking to and ran over with him for a few minutes. He said, okay, well, he goes, Steve, he goes, here's the deal. He goes, I'm going to put you up there. You're going to testify. He goes, you know, if you want to make a statement, he goes, you can make a statement, but don't be surprised. They're going to ask you some questions. That's not a problem. So I got up there and I basically just said, you know, hey, thanks for having me. I'm an attorney. I've been handling these cases. And this was 1998. So I said, I've been handling these cases now for 7 years. And in the 7 years, I've observed that when people call me and they've got a defective car and they're just a consumer, they don't know that if they bought it, they've got this protection. If they leased it, they don't. And I started giving some examples of vehicles that I had in my office that had been leased and how much trouble we had to go through to get the manufacturers to pay any attention to us at all. And somewhere along the line, it occurred to me that I should probably mention the worst leased vehicle that I'd had at that time. Leased in that sentence was L-E-A-S-E-D, not least as in most or least, but in the worst leased vehicle I'd had at that point. And it was a client of mine who had a Corvette. A client of mine had leased a Corvette very, very expensive Corvette, and it had engine problems. And I'll be honest, this was a long time ago. This is 20 years ago. I don't remember the exact engine problems he had, but I actually brought the repair orders with me. And I actually said, you know, guy brought, you know, bought the vehicle on this date, brought it in for this, complaining of this, brought it in for this, complaining of this, brought it in for this, complaining of this, brought it in. And I ran through all the complaints. And I said, but because it was leased, he couldn't sue under the Lemon Law. So we had to file under the Magnus Moss Warranty Act, Consumer Protection Act. And the car companies knew that those cases are harder to prove. So they would give these clients and me, their attorney, a harder time when we were trying to settle the cases. And they'd actually say, well, you know, we may have to take this to trial because, you know, we don't think your guy meets the burden. And I would always try to argue and say, well, if they met the burden for a purchased car under the Lemon Law, Magnus and Moss Warranty Act covers leased vehicles. Why don't we just use that burden? They go, no. If they'd wanted to use that burden, then Magmoss, they would have given us that burden. And they didn't. And, you know, eventually the case is mostly settled. I had a few that went to trial. But the case with the Corvette, my guy wound up settling that case. We settled the case and moved on with our lives. So 2 years later, I'm in front of the legislature and I'm giving some examples. And, you know, I get some nice questions from, you know, the people on the panel. This wasn't exactly, you know, pharma bro being, you know, ripped into by, you know, inquisitors on the Hill who are angry about the prices of drugs. And so, you know, it was pretty good. So then I go sit in the gallery and I watch as the next people come in and testify. And it turns out that I was the only person testifying in favor of this. And there was a guy who got up there who said, I am here on behalf of General Motors. And he gave a spiel about how the Lemon Law is perfect the way it is. And if people come to us with warranty problems, we fix them. And somebody said, excuse me, sir, let me ask you a question. Mr. Leto just talked about a Corvette. Is that not a GM product? And the guy goes, you know something? That's the strange thing. He goes, I don't know who Mr. Leto is, but if he had contacted me, I would have taken care of that. The people on the panel kind of nod their heads. Oh, okay. And then he's done and he leaves and somebody else gets up there on behalf of another car company. Guy gets up there on behalf of another car company. And these are lobbyists, okay? And then a lobbyist from the Dealers Association got up and testified. And the weird thing is the Lemon Law doesn't make the dealers buy cars back. The dealers should have been in favor of this law to keep their customers happy. But the way politics works, they were siding with the car companies because that's who they buy their cars from. So apparently that was a big deal for them. And so when the hearing broke up, as I was leaving, I heard somebody go, hey, Mr. Leto. And I turn around and it's the guy from General Motors. And he comes walking over to me and he's got this really condescending look and tone to his voice. He looks one way, his voice sounds another. And he goes, Mr. Leto, here's my card. And I take it from him. I look at it, I go, okay. He goes, give that to your client with the Corvette. I'll take care of it. And I go, you heard me testify about the Corvette? He goes, yeah. I go, didn't you hear me say that case settled 2 years ago? And he goes, oh, yeah. Well, if you'd contacted me, I would have taken care of it. And I look at his card, and he's a lobbyist. I go, you're a lobbyist, and you take care of people's cars? But the guy couldn't turn off his lobbying mode while he's in the building, apparently. But the law did get passed. And in fact, the law got passed and was enacted into law January of 1999. And they rewrote the Lemon Law. They did two major revisions to it. One was a revision of the mileage offset, which is not that important to go into here. But the other was that they added the term lease every time they said the word purchase in the Lemon Law. So at MCL 257.14.01, a consumer is a person who purchases or leases a new motor vehicle. And then it describes down below, a lessee is a person who under a lease acquires the right to possession and use of a new motor vehicle. And elsewhere in the statute, it says that if a defect or condition that was reported to the manufacturer or new motor vehicle dealer pursuant to subsection 2 continues to exist and the new motor vehicle has been subject to a reasonable number of repair attempts as described elsewhere. And all of this stuff applies equally to purchased or leased cars. And the only place it diverges is when you calculate what someone gets back. If they're buying a vehicle back, they repurchase the vehicle. If they're buying a leased vehicle back, then there's a little different math involved in how you calculate the buyback of a lease. But it specifically says at 257.14.03.1b, if the new motor vehicle was leased, the consumer has the right to a refund of the lease price paid by the consumer. The consumer may agree to accept a comparable replacement vehicle in lieu of a refund for the lease price paid, but that would be swapped into the same lease. If the consumer agrees to accept a replacement vehicle, the lease agreement shall not be altered except with respect to the identification of the vehicle or the VIN. So the law got changed, like I said, in 1999. Shortly after that, I wrote an article for the Michigan State Bar explaining the new change, and it has been the law ever since. And in case you're curious, 257.14.07 is the real teeth of this law. It says, a consumer who prevails in any action brought under this act may be allowed to, by the court to recover as part of the judgment a sum equal to the aggregate amount of costs and expenses, including attorney's fees, based on time actually expended by the attorney, determined by the court to have been reasonably incurred. So what you're basically looking at is if you are forced to take the manufacturer to court on a lemon law vehicle and you win, your attorney fees get paid by the manufacturer. At least the court can order them to pay you. And that means that if you confront a manufacturer with a good case and say, hey, look, we've got a good case. It's documented right here. Smart manufacturers look at it very quickly and they go, okay, boom, 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 good case. We'll buy it back. And the reason they do that is plaintiff hasn't incurred much in attorney fees. But if they fight it and they go to trial and they lose, they might be paying somebody $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in attorney fees. And I've seen attorney fee awards that large after a trial. And in fact, I've seen larger where a manufacturer decided to dig in their heels and fight one of these things until the cows came home. And when the cows came home, they brought a very, very expensive bill for the manufacturer to pay. So it was good that the law got changed. But I will admit to you that after I left Lansing that day and I was driving home, I was thinking to myself, I wonder if it's going to make sense, if it's going to actually enter their consciousness properly, because there was one guy testifying for the consumers, and there were four or five people testifying on behalf of the manufacturers. And I actually thought to myself, like, I'm outnumbered here. But what I was thinking is, if all is right in the universe, and it never is, but we strive for that, if all is right in the universe, the people on the panel will at least look at this and go, okay, there's one guy who's describing the actual cases that are happening to consumers in Michigan. And the other people are all paid mouthpieces for big manufacturing concerns who don't want the law to change simply because they're protecting their interests, even though there's no logical distinction to say we will make the lemon law apply to purchased vehicles, but not leased vehicles. Because like I said before, car doesn't know if it's been leased. It doesn't make any sense at all, you know? So I feel really bad about the clients who came to me in 1998 and before, because I would have that discussion with them and say, right now the law doesn't cover leased vehicles. I'm sorry. And it was the craziest thing. But the law got changed. I also did testify in Lansing at least one other time back then. I'm talking about mid to late 90s. That was more of a strange one. But there's a situation, I've done videos on this before, about how there are widespread problems on some platforms where the manufacturer knows that a lot of people are having this one particular problem with this this car. And they'll actually say, you know, we found a fix for this. And if the people bring the car in under warranty, obviously we'll fix it. But if people brought the car in under warranty before they figured the fix out, we're not going to notify them. We're just going to hope that they run the warranty out. And then if they bring the car in and they're angry, you can pull them aside and say, look, we found a fix. It's going to be a goodwill matter, and we'll fix it as a matter of goodwill, but it's not a warranty repair. And if you want that goodwill repair, we'll do it for you. And some of those bleed over into a person will have the car for the entire life of the warranty. The warranty expires. They now bring it in for the problem, and the dealer says you're out of warranty. And if the customer complains properly to the right people, sometimes the dealership or a zone rep or the equivalent would lean in and say, look, we do have a fix for this. It's outside of warranty. It's going to be goodwill, meaning that we're going to do it for you, but it's not because we have to. We're doing it for you as a matter of goodwill. And they, oh, of course, people will do that. And so word would get out that there's a problem that they'll fix out of warranty for some people, but not others. And the question then became, is that a good thing for manufacturers to be doing? Because there were people out there who would say, I brought my vehicle in just as the warranty expired. They said, we can't fix it. You know, we could fix it, but you have to pay us. So the client pays them the money and then goes on the internet or something and is talking to people in a news group or a discussion board and is told, oh, you paid for that? I got it for free because I bitched. And so the idea that there are these secret or hidden warranties out there bothers some people. And the interesting thing is I have mixed feelings about them, but I actually testified and I simply described this to the legislature about the experiences I'd had. And that's one of the things that I always find troubling about when you watch like C-SPAN or excerpts off C-SPAN, is they'll bring people in to testify who are actually just lobbyists who are just shilling and saying, you know, according to the industry, and they're reading off statistics and so on. But these aren't actual witnesses to anything. And I was an actual witness. I could actually say I had a client who had this problem and it wasn't repaired and then boom, boom, boom. Or like with the leases, I've had problems with clients. I've represented clients with this problem. And so when they bring somebody in to testify in a trial, you bring in people with firsthand knowledge of something relevant to the case. But you often see it in Washington, D.C., where they just say, no, we're bringing in this person who's the spokesperson for some interest group. And the question is, why should an interest group, because let's face it, we all know they're paid off by one side or the other. Why are they testifying now? So they can explain to the panel what their spin is going to be on this law. And then, of course, the people on the other side of the aisle bring in their guy who's going to spin it the other way. And I'm always thinking to myself, why don't they bring in somebody who actually knows what they're talking about based on firsthand knowledge in the trenches? That's who I'd want to hear from if I was a politician. But, of course, that's how politics works. So that's the one time that I testified for the legislature on a very, very important issue that's getting Lemon Law to cover leased vehicles. And beyond that, haven't spent a lot of time in Lansing. Questions or comments, put them below. Otherwise, talk to you later. Bye-bye.